How do you motivate people? There's a lot of ways you can do it. Some good, maybe some not so good. I heard the story of a Los Angeles Dodger pitcher named Don Sutton. Many of you who follow baseball probably remember him. He was in a slump. For 8 weeks, he had not won a game. He was the pitcher, and he was just not doing what he needed to do. And the critical press was suggesting that maybe he be dropped from the starting line and pushed further down and maybe do a little bit less damage. And it looked really bleak for this young man, and Sutton felt terrible about it. But then before a game, the manager of the Dodgers, a man named Walter Alston, came up to him, tapped him on the shoulder and said, "I need to talk to you for just a minute," which is never good, you know. When you ask somebody, "Well, what is it about?" And they say, "Oh, about 2 minutes." You know, that's not a good response. "Don," he said, "I know how the past couple of months have been really tough for you, and everybody's wondering whether or not we can even make it to the playoffs. You know, there's a lot of pressure, so I've had to make a decision." And Sutton just had visions of being taken off the mound, and it was his worst nightmare. But then Alston continued, "If the Dodgers are going to win this year, they're going to do it with you on the plate." That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Coming to what may, you're staying in the starting job, and that's all that I want to say about it. Well, he still lost. In fact, he lost for 2 more weeks. But because of his manager's encouragement, he felt different about it. Something in him was turning around. He found himself pitching what turned out to be some of the best ball of his career. And in the National League pennant drive, he won 13 out of 14 games. Pretty amazing, isn't it? There's all kinds of ways that you can motivate people. You can motivate them through guilt. I'm a preacher. That's sort of my profession, right? You know, I should be able to make that work. And there's a few of us who motivate through fear, some through shame. But this is not the way that Jesus motivated people. Jesus motivated people through positive messages, through messages of hope, messages of encouragement. So look at the lesson for today. Jesus says to his followers, "You are the light of the world." Now just let that roll over you for a second. Just imagine that for a second. Here was a motley crew of farmers and fishermen and tax collectors and housewives in a little remote village in an obscure part of the world. And Jesus is saying to them, "You are the light of the world." Of the world. I mean, just I can hardly believe it. It is a statement of faith. And so go further than that. Talk about a crazy idea as the light of the world. That bunch of people, it must have sounded absurd to them at the time. Only Jesus could have seen in this motley bunch that God could change the world forever and use them to do it. But at the time, probably just sounded like, I don't know, some sort of idle chatter. "You are the light of the world," he said. And so they were, and they did. That's what happened. Now, do you want to hear something really absurd? You are the light of the world. You are. Jesus says it to us this morning that we are the light of the world. And as you think about it, you sink your teeth into it, you and I as the light of the world, what does that mean? I mean, okay, sounds great on paper, but how do we play that out? Well, first of all, it means that we have a responsibility to the world. I mean, it makes sense, don't you, if we are the light of the world? A lighthouse steers ships away from the rocks. A light bulb lights up a room. Light does not exist for its own sake, for its own glory. It exists to brighten up the world. That's the first thing that Jesus is saying to us. We have a responsibility for the world. I was reading recently about one of the most remarkable young men who ever lived. It was an amazing story. He was very young. He'd been left blind in an accident, totally blind. In the 19th century, he was living in France, and blind children had very little hope back then, very little given to them. But then a kind priest, Father Jacques Poulet, took an interest in the man, in the young man. He was amazed at the boy's intelligence and his ability to learn. And with his parents' permission, he enrolled him in the young man in the Royal Institute for Blind Youths in Paris. And thrusting him into this environment was terrifying. The young man couldn't see. He didn't know anybody. It was a very difficult time for him. He's lonely and depressed. But in time, he found a few friends. He found some encouragement. But he was frustrated because the Institute's books had very few of them had raised type on it. And he found that the symbols in raised type was confusing. So he set out when he was 12 years old, just 12 years old, to come up with something a little bit different, something that might work better. And he encountered indifference. He even encountered hostility when he tried to convince the world that his system might work better. Even with the support of the director of the Institute, he was told again and again and again, you're just too young. You can't come up with something that's going to work like that. And years passed, and the young man grew older. He was made a teacher at the Institute, became a really accomplished organist, always hoping that somehow his method would find acceptance, but his health was poor. And it's not until he lay in bed dying of tuberculosis that he heard that the first steps had been taken to popularize his system. And though he didn't live to see it, Louis Braille's alphabet became the universal method for reading for the blind. Yesterday I was on an elevator and I remember this story. I'm looking at the letters and I'm thinking, I have no idea what those dots mean. I know it says it above there, you know, something like in case of an emergency, do not use the elevator. But I'm thinking, what an amazing young man. His courage, his hunger for knowledge enabled him to triumph, and now disability and disease and other things of the world are a thing of the past. He became simply a light for the world. For those whose physical eyes had failed him, how wonderful it is whenever a young person sets out to make the world a better place. And some of us can remember when the pulpits of this country sounded with the call for young men to enter out as missionaries, as lights of the world, in a world that is filled with darkness. We don't sound that trumpet very much anymore. We don't call people to really sacrifice all that they have and all that they are for the good of humanity. And it is too bad, because we are the light of the world and we have a responsibility to the whole world. Now, next week, I think it's interesting that we put this message together with next week is World Communion Sunday. Right? It's a day when we celebrate that all the churches in the world celebrating on that day. So I'm going to ask for volunteers right now, so get your hand ready, okay, because some of you want to raise it up. I want to fill the table with bread that comes from your country. My grandparents were from Germany, so I'm bringing pumpernickel, so don't even think about it. And we're going to take that bread and we're going to lay it up onto the table as a way of signifying that we come from lots of different places. So who will join me with that? Who will bring a loaf of bread? I know, Faith, you'll bring something, right? I know you will. Don't even raise your hand. I know you will. Others? All right, I'm counting on you. Bring some, bring it a little early, and we'll place it on the table as a symbol of the fact that we are part of the whole world. It's so easy in New Smyrna Beach to think that we are New Smyrna Beach, you know? And we are. What a wonderful place to live. What a wonderful place to visit. I absolutely love it here. Going to Dade City just really kind of cemented that. It was great. It's a great place. It's just this is that much better. I mean, it really is. It's a wonderful place. But we are not just this. We are people of the whole world, and we are responsible for that. So something else that also needs to be said is that we have something that the world desperately needs. I mean, that's the thing that Jesus is saying to us, that we are the light of the world. We have something that the world cannot find any place else. And it's very simple. Mother Teresa, who died some years ago, she had a group of foreign nuns coming to visit her, and they all were just captivated by her spirit. But they had some questions, and so when Mother Teresa said, "What are your questions?" A lady in the front raised her hand, and she said, I just have one. As you know, most of the nuns, most of the orders represented here have been losing members, and it seems that more and more women are leaving the holy orders all the time, and yet your order is attracting thousands upon thousands. How do you do it? And without hesitating, Mother Teresa said, I give them Jesus. Well, yes, I know, the woman said, but take habits, for example. Do your women object to wearing habits and the rules of the order? How do you do it? I give them Jesus, she replied. Yes, yes, I know, Mother, she said, but can you be more specific? I give them Jesus, she repeated again. Mother, we're all aware of your fine work. I just want to know about something else. And Mother Teresa said, I give them Jesus. There is nothing else. What do we have at this church that is not anyplace else? How many of you have been Rotarians? I'm a Paul Harris fellow. I'll tell you that Rotary was a wonderful part of my life, but it was not Jesus. It was not. How many of you are any kind of a group that's out there? You could they do good work. PEO is one. There's so many wonderful people out there. But what do you give them? Do you give them Jesus? So often we're reminded we live in a pluralistic world. Today there are people of all kinds of religious backgrounds who are calling our country home, and we can learn so many things from them, from our religious neighbors. But if somebody would ask you, though, what is distinctive about Christianity, let me suggest that you do as Mother Teresa did: give them Jesus. The greatest heresy current today is that all religions are basically the same. Certainly all of the world's great religions have something worthwhile to offer. And you can find a great, great treasure troves to fill your heart in many of them. But what you can't find is the story of the prodigal son. You cannot find the good Samaritan or the rich fool. There is no higher order of life than that which Jesus taught. Christianity is an institution, as an institution, might not be, well, too appealing sometimes. Sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot. But if you understand the life and the teachings of Jesus, there is no peer. We have a responsibility for the world, and we have something that the world cannot find anywhere else. And this brings me to the last thing. We are not the source of the light, but just a reflection of a much greater source. There is one who has touched our lives and has given us the power and the authority to touch other lives. Eric Butterworth told about a college professor who had his sociology class go out into the neighborhood. We did this in seminary. We went out and talked to people. It was kind of an interesting experience, but his was in an area where the young people were very, very disadvantaged. And he went out to talk to boys and to ask them about their lives. And as each one of them responded, the young people would write down their response. And then they would put it all together. And every single person came back to the professor and said, "These kids have no chance." How sad. 25 years later, there's a new professor, and he goes into a file cabinet and he pulls out the report and he says, "Well, this is interesting." You know, as professors want to do, to try to find something for their kids, their students to do. He said, let's do it again. Let's go out and find these kids and find out what happened to them. And they did. The students went out, they found them, and they interviewed them, and it was a remarkable thing. Because out of all the kids, there were only something like, of the 176 kids remaining, 180 of them had achieved extraordinary success as lawyers and doctors and businessmen. How? So they interviewed them, they asked them, and one thing stood out. The phrase, "there was this teacher," changed their lives. And the teacher was still alive. She was quite elderly, but her mind was still sharp as a tack. And the professor went to her and said, "What did you do to these boys that caused them to be able to achieve such great things, all of them?" And she said, "It was very simple. I just loved them." It seems so simple, doesn't it? I know. I'm almost embarrassed to make it that simple, just to love people. "Oh, we got to have a program. We've got to have something. We've got to have some marketing." All that, no. All you have to do is love the people around you. I will tell you that it is our calling to do so. We are to be lovers of people. Well, there was a story that, as we are to be the light of the world, of three guys who were, I don't know, it's a train story, Bill, so you'll like this one, but this was a big train. They thought they would go on a lark. They just hopped on the train. And it was going slowly, and as it went out of town, nighttime was coming. But as they got to the edge of town, they got ready to hop off, the train started to go faster. And before they knew it, they were out in the middle of no place, and the train was just cooking along. They poured on the steam or the coal or the gas or whatever they do in trains to make them go faster. And these three boys were in big trouble. So in best Butch Cassidy style, what did they do? They held hands and jumped off the train, and they all tumbled down. They went into a bunch of berry bushes and such, and so it wasn't a good thing. But now the train is gone, and they're in the middle of nowhere, and they have no idea where they are, and it is pitch black. But one of the boys thinks, I think it might be a little lighter over there. And so they started walking that way, feeling their way through the brambles and all the stuff that was there. Before long, it got a little brighter and got a little brighter and got a little brighter. And before they knew it, they could see that there was a little town, little tiny town, just a little bit of light. And they were safe. They called for help, and everything was okay. But think about that, though. These friends got home safely because they saw a light, a distant light. They walked to its glow. It became an overwhelming beacon that led them to where they needed to go. I don't think that I'm being overly dramatic when I say that there are people in this world who are lost in darkness, just as those three boys were, and they're looking for help. They're looking for light, any light, to lead them to spiritual and emotional and mental safety. So here's where it pinches a bit. How's your light? What are you going to shed today when you leave this place? Last week, had a great opportunity to go to Mom's after. Anybody wants to go for a great lunch? Apparently, this has become the hot spot for lunch after church, and it should be. It was delicious. But there's a table, right, of church people over there, our church people, that apparently are eating there every Sunday and did not tell me, so I found out, you know, and they're over there. But here's the cool part. We were sitting near the cashier, and she said, I've got the church table. And I thought, well, that's interesting. They're called the church table. So they know they're church people, and I'm thinking, oh, please, Lord, make sure they've behaved, you know? just make sure they behave. It's all right, you know, whatever. But, you know, I've heard this from professional, and then, by the way, they do. They behave very well. The waitress, because I asked her, said, oh, yeah, they're the best. We look forward to them being here. I said, well, that's great. I didn't identify with them because, you know, I didn't want to get too mixed up with that group. But anyway, no, but you want to eat. But here's the thing. I know professional waiters and waitresses who really, really, really don't like it when you come in after church because there's so many church people. They're so difficult. Instead of being the light of the world, they're just the opposite. And if that's you, please go home. Go make a bologna sandwich. Don't do that. Because you have an opportunity every time you interact with somebody to either be the light of the world, the light that can lead them to Jesus Christ, and you can actually say the words Jesus Christ to them, and they won't be offended because they are desperate for it. We live in a world of darkness, and you are the only light. You're the only one. The Methodists are doing it, or they're trying. The Baptists are doing it, or they're trying. I mean, all of us together, we're not in this alone. We are part of this great movement across the world to be the light. But it only happens one person at a time, and that is you. When Jesus said to his disciples, he's saying it to you. You are the light of the world. So how are you doing? Can people find their way home because of you? I hope so. Because we have a responsibility for a world. We have what the world desperately needs. We're not the source of that light. We just reflect the light. And the light that we reflect is the light of the Savior of the world. So let us pray for that. Father, as we are well aware, we don't always do this well. It's hard. We want to be people who are known for our love. We want to be people that are known for the loving kindness that we share. We want to be that light, but it's hard. It's hard. And it wasn't easy for those disciples when you told them to get it, but they did. And eventually, their light shared freely was your light, and it has changed the world. So we ask, oh God, open us up to the possibilities of what that really means. And we ask this prayer in the name of the light of the world, Jesus Christ. Amen.